Perfect. Okay, Paul, we are ready to go.
Fantastic. All right, Eric, again, thank you again. If I could just start, maybe you just say your name.
My name is Eric Hayden.
Great. And, so we're going to talk primarily about, well, maybe I'll just start. When I talk about the miracle of ice, what comes to mind for you?
Oh, I think if I was going to sort of have a picture moment, I would say it was the game when they played the Russians. Is what I really look at as the miracle on ice was, you know, beating this team that was, I mean, they were basically professionals, and we had a bunch of kids who were just coming out of college or in college, and they had been killed by these guys 2 or 3 weeks prior to the Olympics, and to see what they did that evening was impressive. It was fun.
And you were at the game.
I was at the game. I was lucky enough to go with a couple of my friends, and we had a little suite that we got to sit in, so we got to watch the whole thing.
So where were you seated there?
We were in a suite. I'm going to say it was on the U.S. side of the ice. And I remember sitting with my friends, who were also speed skaters. And I looked at them and said, boy, are we lucky, because we're down on the U.S. side of the ice. The puck's going to be down here for at least, you know, 2 out of the 3 periods. So we got some good seats, so let's get ready. Yeah.
So maybe just tell me a little bit. Was there any thought of you not going to the game just so you could rest up for your last race?
No, you know, I had grown up with a couple of the guys on the team, so we were good friends. And I was trying to get to as many games as I could. And looking back, I think I probably missed one of the early preliminary games. And so going to the semifinal game against Russia was a no-brainer. And you can imagine, after you win, you know, a couple gold medals, it's easy to get tickets. So I did have to race the next day, which leads to another story, because I did end up oversleeping because of the excitement from the night before watching the hockey team. But I would not have missed it, no.
So tell me about the oversleeping.
Can I stop you 1 second, Paul?
So the next morning after the hockey game, I had to skate the 10,000 meters, which was the last race of my Olympic experience. And I had set my alarm clock to go off. Usually I'd get up about 3 hours before the competition and go get some breakfast, go through my normal 2-hour pre-race routine. And an hour and a half before the race, I hear a knocking on my door because I'd slept through my alarm clock. And it was my coach going, you know, we're out in the car waiting for you. Where are you? So I had to scramble to get ready for that 10,000 meters the next day, just because I was a little bit exhausted from watching the hockey team the night before.
So at the 10,000 meter, I think your opponent, who was Russian, was there any sort of echo from the night before that came to that race?
No, you know, I think most sportsmen would tell you that when you're out competing against the rest of the field, I don't think there's a lot of, at least in my shoes, there was not a lot of this national sentiment, I got to beat the Russians, I got to beat the Germans. We were all good buddies. And we would go out and race each other, and we certainly wanted to win. But when we were done racing, we became very good friends. And Leshkin, the guy I was paired with, was the world record holder at that time in the 10,000 meters. So from a speed skating standpoint, I thought I had a very good pair, and I thought it was going to be a pretty darn good race. It was just I was not going through my normal pre-race routine. I was having to sort of scramble and cut things a little bit short and try to get ready as quick as I could.
And if I'm not mistaken, you went on to set the world record that day.
Okay, hold on, Paul. So we didn't talk about eyeline. So you want to actually look at Paul, not the camera.
Okay, we'll do.
His eye line's going to be off for those questions. I just noticed that.
Okay.
Do you want to redo those questions, or?
We may come back, but we'll stay with
okay.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it. Sorry about that. So you're looking at a computer now.
Yeah.
So on that race, maybe you can just tell me again. So you I believe you set the world record that day.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a special day for me skating that race and the results, because I always felt that the very best skater in speed skating is the guy who can skate at 10,000 meters. It's a long race. It takes many years of training to get proficient at it. And to step off the ice after I was done skating world record was something that I did not expect. I thought I had a good chance of maybe winning, but certainly not setting a world record. And Leshkin turned out to be a very good pair. At the beginning of the race, he took off and he challenged me. I had started out on already a world record pace, and I'm going to say probably 8 laps into it, he was, 100 meters ahead of me. And I was starting to think, okay, I'm going to have to start picking it up. And luckily, a few laps later, he kind of started to falter, and I came back. But now that was a big, big day. And when I look back at my career, that was probably one of the best races I ever skated. Yeah, you know, that's, I think, what makes what I did so unique and unusual in sports is, you know, somebody who can skate a race that's 30 seconds and also be very competitive in a race that's 15 minutes. That's just, you know, not heard of in most sports. And I don't think in skating you'll see it again. I think if you're going to make a comparable analogy to some of the other sports, it would probably be like running a 200-meter race and then being able to be very competitive at the 5,000 meters, which, you know, it's just, it doesn't happen.
How is that? I mean, because, again, I'll do it from, again, my standpoint of track.
Yeah.
It's almost different physiques, really, right?
Yeah, you know, if you deal with sports and sports medicine, you realize that you got to have a pretty unique physiology to do that kind of thing, because the shorter races are all anaerobic, and then as you get into the longer races, it becomes more of an endurance event. And to have that unique combination, most people kind of focus on one or the other because it's almost impossible to do. If I was going to sort of pigeonhole myself into the type of physiology I have, I think I'm sort of a good middle distance guy at 1,000 meters, 1,500 meters, but because of hard training, I was able to do well at the longer distances. And because I had good strength and was very efficient with each stroke, I was pretty competitive at the shorter distances also.
That's amazing. And so growing up in Madison, when did you start skating?
I started skating at age 2 because it was something that our family did. And we did it because my grandfather was one of the early University of Wisconsin hockey coaches in the early 60s. And so behind his house was a lake, and he always made sure that there was a place that was shoveled off on the lake where we could skate and play hockey. And so part of the weekend adventures in the Hayden family was going out and putting your skates on at your grandparents and skating around. And I originally started as a figure skater and then started playing ice hockey, and then from ice hockey got recruited to speed skating.
When did you realize you were good or great?
I think, you know, even when you're good, you still though are, you know, not always confident in your abilities. But I thought from about age 12, 13, I had the ability to be a good skater if I put the time and effort into it.
And at the Olympics in Lake Placid, you gave the athlete's oath. You want me to just tell me a little bit about that and what kind of honor that was?
Oh yeah, you know, it's a big honor to do that. I mean, you're basically giving the oath on behalf of all the athletes to compete fairly and respect your sport and respect your peers, which is something pretty special to be able to do that on behalf of all the rest of the athletes. At the time, it was a little unnerving. You know, you're up there and you got to give the oath, and I don't know if you look closely, but I had that little 3x4 card in my hand so I could fall back on that, but that was pretty cool. And it was the first time, I should say the second time, I'd been at an opening ceremonies and to be part of it and to rub elbows with, you know, some great competitors, including those on your team. It was kind of fun.
And going in from your perspective, I think, and not just your perspective, I mean, you mentioned it a little earlier, the hockey team, you know, I think the expectation for the hockey team was, you know, if they could medal, that would be a real accomplishment.
Oh. Yeah, no doubt about that. I think, coming into the Olympics, they had been playing a couple national teams, and I think it was, 10 days, maybe 2 weeks before the Olympics, they played the Russians, and I think they got beat, I'm going to say 10-2, 12-2. I mean, it was a trouncing. 10-3. So their expectations, I think, were at least to try to make it into the medal rounds if they could, but just to win a couple games, I think, for those guys was going to be a success, but they went way beyond that.
And why do you think that is?
I think there's probably a couple things. These guys were young. They didn't have grand expectations, so they didn't have the pressure of really the press or the public on them. They had played together, but certainly the more often that they could play, the better that they were going to get and the more experience that they were going to have playing with each other. And then you're also on your home turf where you got the backing of the fans and the public. And, beyond that, it's hard for me to figure out how these guys turned it around like they did because they had a lot to make up when you think about what happened just a few weeks before. They had a good coach. They had a coach who really understood how to, twist the different knobs and mechanisms to get the best out of his athletes, and I think it brought the team together and made them really a cohesive unit.
Did you ever meet Herb Brooks?
I don't believe I have ever met Herb Brooks.
And at what player did you hang out with the players when you were in Lake Placid?
Never had much of a chance to hang out with those guys. We would cross paths like going back and forth to the cafeteria. But we were sort of on opposite schedules. I was doing a lot of competing sort of late morning, early afternoon. And then those guys were usually playing in the evening. So we were sort of crossing paths. But, I had grown up playing a lot of ice hockey and played ice hockey till I was about 16, 17 at a high school level. So I played against a bunch of these guys. And so I made an effort to really take the evening off and try to relax and get away from the pressure of what I was doing by spending the evening watching a great hockey game and watching my friends play it.
Would you like see them in the Olympic Village and like high five them or anybody in
high five? I don't even know if there were high fives back then. No, I mean, we would talk about what was going on, and some of those guys would say, "Hey, I'm going to come watch you tomorrow in your race." And I'd say, "Okay, I'll be there tonight watching you guys play. Good luck, and let's keep it rolling." I did not see their medal ceremony. Well, I don't believe I did see their medal ceremony, no.
I'm curious for you or for the other people in Lake Placid, was this whole Cold War subtext there, or is that something that kind of came in later?
I think it really kind of depends on the individual. Me personally, no. I never really sort of appreciated all the politics that was going on. Although, there was always these rumors about what was going to happen with the summer games, and ultimately there was the boycott, which none of us really agreed to. But when it came to sort of the day-to-day politics of what was going on, for me personally, I looked at sports as sort of that one oasis away from all the politics of what was going on in the world, where you had an opportunity to bring young people from all over the world together and to compete and enjoy the company of each other and learn about each other. Oh, I had watched the Russians play for many, many years because, like I said, I had a history of playing hockey, and those guys were known as being one of the premier teams, and they'd come and play the NHL and always be able to hold their own and sometimes even beat most of those guys. So it was always a pleasure to watch those guys play. I mean, there were guys who were noted for their abilities as forwards. There were guys who were noted for their abilities as defensemen. He had this world-renowned goalie. So it was always fun to see those guys because you knew you were going to be, you're going to have a treat. You're going to see the very best of the best playing hockey.
And for you, being in the stands, when they pulled Tretiak, did that resonate with you at all? Or was that like a of seemingly a chink in the armor, or as a fan?
Oh, well, you know, when they end up pulling their very best goalie, you know that they're having issues and they're not as confident as what they would expect, because that is not something that you have sort of in the playbook. You know, whenever you go into a competition, you got plan A, B, C, or D. Pulling Tradiac is probably plan M, N, P sort of thing. It's not one of those first things you're going to do. There's a unique bond that most Olympians have. And so when I see Arruzioni, we're good buddies. I mean, we'll sit down and have a beer together. We'll have dinner together. Our paths cross probably once every couple of years. But it's almost like meeting up with your brother again. You know, there's a time where you haven't seen each other, but gosh, you get right back into things like, you know, you just saw him yesterday. Oh, I'll tell you, you're going to laugh at this, but the coolest thing that I did at the Olympics was watching the last game of the hockey team when they played Finland. And I had, I think, what was the best seat in the house. I didn't even have a ticket, but I got to sit underneath a card table that behind me was Al Michaels and Ken Dryden announcing the game. So I basically was sitting right next to those guys, listening to them announce the game while the game was going on in front of me.
Nice to have 5 gold medals.
It's nice to have 5 gold medals.
Paul, there was a bird that flew by the window. I don't know if you care. It was a rather big bird. Otherwise, I wouldn't worry about it.
I need to make a noise. I think that's good.
Okay.
Good. And just a couple more questions, Eric. So there are a lot of upsets all the time. Why do you think the Miracle on Ice sort of resonates with people still today?
I think for, you know, a couple reasons. One is nationalism. It's always, you know, people have grown up where, you know, it's USA versus Russia. So I think nationalism plays a part of it. But more importantly, I think it's sort of that underdog that puts it all together and is able to beat the Goliath. Is what resonates, I think, with most people.
And if you were telling a young person today who wanted to try to be an Olympian, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to chase their dreams, that the experience is wonderful. You get to see things and do things that many people can only dream about, and you will have a much more sort of worldly perspective on what this world is about.
Do you still skate? Do you still speed skate at all?
Not very often. I think the last time I skated now is about 2 years ago. And near my house, there's a pond that freezes. So I love going out there with my hockey skates, and there's usually a group of other guys out there. And yeah, we pretend we're the Miracle on Ice.
Not to this day still.
Yeah. We get the Ken Dryden and the Al Michaels over at the bench, and they can announce the game all they want.
Is there anything else you want to just tell me that's sort of a fond memory from that Olympics for you or from the game or anything?
Well, you know, when it comes to the hockey, I remember, you know, showing up there and thinking, okay, I want to watch the U.S. I love hockey. I want to go see hockey. And so I started watching the U.S. play, and you just sort of – you watch this – team sort of grow in maturity, and you watch this momentum continually to grow. And after a while, I was like, wow, these guys, I think, have the ability to do something pretty great. And I enjoyed watching those guys play every night when I had the opportunity. And it was a way to also take the stress off of what I was going through. So I looked at it as very good entertainment, but also a chance to get to watch my friends do what they do best. Yeah.
He's like, I was so embarrassed for them. He's like, you're letting these kids, these college kids beat you?
Yeah.
And then he says, by the end, I'm like, well done. they're yeah. the only team that actually tied them. So I thought that they would. I didn't think the Americans would score any other goals in the rest of that Olympics.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's amazing how they did come together. Well, I, you know, that I can't tell you how great this has been. I really appreciate it. We're all set. I mean, you were
okay.
wonderful. And,
all right.
Really appreciate it. And what I'll do is, you know, I think I sent you some, but I'll just send you some of the ones we've done in the Kennedy's house, just to give you a sense of what we're doing.
Okay. So you can send that on email?
Yeah, I'll send you the link. So I'll do it right now. I'll send
okay.
you the link to the other ones you can see put on the side. If you can see the ones we did on the Kennedy assassination.
All right, and you got...
Edit this. Okay. Put it together. We'll probably put some photos in there and maybe some video. And then, you know, it'll be a little vignette of you know, you're talking about your experience.
Okay. Great. Okay. Thank you.
Paul, just as the first three questions, I'm not sure, the video may not be acceptable on the first three.
Do you mind if we just ask you two questions?
No, okay. Let's do it.
You want to just tell me, are you still rolling there, Jeff?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to just tell me, so you were at the Miracle on Ice Games. Do you want to just tell me where you were seated at that game?
I was lucky enough to have one of the suites. And, you know, as you can imagine, once you start winning medals, when you ask for things, people are usually pretty accommodating. And so I had a suite with a couple of my other speed skating friends, and I remember looking at them and saying, you know, hey, we are on the U.S. end of the ice, which means probably for the first and third period, we're going to see a lot of action down here. But as it ended up, boy, it was back and forth all night.
And you were saying earlier how you're still friends with Mike Ruzzioni. What was the feeling in the suite when Mike hit that sort of go-ahead?
I mean, we were jumping up and down. I mean, you can imagine the whole place was going crazy. Because it was just not something that we had expected. We just thought that the American team was going to kind of roll over to these guys, and yet they kept holding their own, and you just kept waiting for them to finally collapse. And you know, finally, Ruzzioni puts it in the net. It's like, yes, we're going on. Oh, yeah, and you often find when teams get the lead, sometimes they start falling back and start trying to play defense, and you always worry about that because all of a sudden it's sort of a change of strategy, and the strategy that they've already employed has gotten them into the lead, and to start changing things, you hate seeing that. And he just kept thinking, man, come on, Jim Craig, do not make a mistake. But I think the last maybe minute or so, you just felt that the Russians had given up and that they had finally fallen apart, and they realized that they were going to lose. It was inevitable.
And apparently, you know, there's footage of this, Herb Brooks just keep yelling at him, play your game, play your game.
Yeah.
Your game. It's to your point, I think.
Yeah, exactly. It's very easy for guys to start kind of falling back and just playing defense and letting the shots come in, and you don't want that to happen.
And then after the game, did you go out onto Main Street? I think there's a lot of sort of celebration out there.
No, we didn't get in. We did not get a chance to hang out on Main Street, but you can imagine with all the people pouring out of the stadium, it took us a good hour and a half to get back to the Olympic Village. So it was a struggle, and I had to skate the next day. So I wanted to get back as soon as I could.
And I'm not sure we got this. I'll just ask you again. So the next morning, tell me how the next morning unfolded for you.
It got a little hectic. You know, most athletes are pretty set in the way that they like to prepare. And for myself, I would like the alarm clock to go off or at least get things going about 3 hours before to head to the rink and get to the rink 2 hours before. And I had a very set program that I'd go through. Well, an hour and a half before I was supposed to skate, I'm still asleep and there's a knock on my door and it's my coach going, Eric, what's going on? I had slept through my alarm clock because of being up late the night before. Yeah, I ran to the cafeteria, grabbed a couple slices of bread, and then headed to the rink and tried to curtail some of the pre-race things that I was doing. But I was scrambling. But it was, I mean, still, you sort of had resonating in the back of your mind what happened the night before. It was kind of cool.
So when you got in the car, I don't know if you remember this. So you got in the car, the coach is like, "We're waiting for you." You get in the car. What do you say?
Ooh. First, you apologize to your coach and the other guys waiting there. But then you're starting to try to figure out, okay, what am I going to have to do so that I'm ready to go in the next hour and a half? And that's not something you want to be doing right before a race in the Olympics at the, you know, sort of the premiere of your event.
Yeah, that should be good.
Okay. Eric, you were fantastic. I can't thank you enough. I'll send you these videos, but really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, you guys. Have a good day.
What's that?
Have a good day.